what are the elite athletes doing? If you're looking to set elite goals for yourself, I don't care if you're a 5-hour marathon and you want to run a 4:30. You're trying to do something that you've never done before. You have performance on mind. One thing you'll always notice is you're not going to see a lot of low-carb athletes in endurance sports at the top of the sport.
Welcome to the Spartan Deca series on Spartan Up with Jared Cogswell, Director of Sport, and Yancey Culp, Director of Programming.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we had a phenomenal episode one. Today we're coming at you with a heavy-hitting episode two, and we do a deep dive, really diving deep on what it truly takes. We hate it, what it takes to make Joe Gray, Joe Gray. And let me tell you something. Joe is a friend of mine. You ever had that friend that you're a friend because you message back and forth on Instagram, PM, or text message 45 times, but you've never met in person? Well, it's being on the podcast and seeing him there in his face, it's almost like you got to meet in person. And I had a good feeling Joe Gray was a selfless, humble person, but myself, and I promise you as a listener, you stay tuned for this full episode, you're going to feel the same thing. I know you probably felt it in episode one, but Joe Gray is a selfless and humble human being. A couple things we talk about. Acknowledging that something that works for someone else may not be perfect for you. You got to be able to adjust on the fly. A little bit of, sometimes we're guinea pigs. We see what works for us. But really and truly, when you're the one out doing the training, the coach is not right there with you, you check your stats enough, and you know, really and truly, you learn a lot about yourself. You know when you're moving off. You know what? Three races in a row, I did this. Performance. Last week, I tweaked this or that and did something that I've never been told to do by any freaking book or any coach, and it worked. I tried something out, and it worked. I could have asked Joe Gray 100 questions. Could have gone for 4 hours. Couldn't quite hit that many, but we do some rapid-fire questions on this one, ladies and gentlemen. We do a deep dive in nutrition, a little bit of training. We didn't hit 100 questions, but we hit a lot of them. It's going to be a great episode. Let's go.
Become the best version of yourself in just 3 minutes a day with Heroic, the new social training platform built to help you be more energized, productive, and connected today. Join the movement at heroic.us. Use the code Spartan20 to save 20%.
Did you play any other sports growing up?
Yeah, basketball was my main sport, and I dabbled a little bit. I like to do a little bit of boxing as well. But yeah, basketball was kind of the main love for many years before running came into the picture.
Did you ever? I'm guessing you played in high school basketball.
A little bit. I stopped playing. I think my junior year, I transferred schools, and the summer going into my junior year, I started getting a lot of collegiate letters, and I had a lot of people telling me, "Hey, you need to stop playing basketball. You need to focus on running." And I was like, you know, maybe I'll just do that my junior year and see how it goes. And I stopped playing ball that year. And then, you know, things obviously went really well. It's tough to blend basketball and distance running, you know, to a certain extent. When you're talking about playing at that elite level, there's a certain weight that's very necessary. You can't just be skin and bones like most of us cross country runners. You got to have, you know, you got to have some muscle. You got to have some meat on your bones. Otherwise, you're going to get punished when you start going to those big tournaments where, you know, their point guard is 6'6", and he's, you know, 190, you know, and he's jumping out the gym, and you're just a cross country runner. So, you know, it was a good choice, I think.
Yeah, you don't finish a basketball game without a bunch of bruises. That's
yeah.
Did you have a favorite, track and field versus cross country, or did you love them both?
Oh, I think cross country has always been one of my favorites, even today. I just love the, you know, you're racing over natural terrain. You had hills. You had to, you know, navigate, negotiate technical terrain. I don't know. It was just something about it that it was so dynamic, and I really loved cross country for that.
On that note, as I had the wonderful opportunity to work with high school cross country athletes, it's my perception, at least here in Texas, when I was growing up running back in the 80s, it felt like, you know, you look at the times and it's like, okay, they were slower back then. It feels like the courses are a little more designed to say, you'll see cross-country times almost matching what the kid would run on the road or the track. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, man. Preaching to the choir here, man, I'm really frustrated with the fact that, especially in the U.S., we've kind of softened cross-country. It's not really a tough sport. It's not even a different genre or a separate genre from track and field anymore. I mean, it's a track race. I've run a couple national championships where you're running road times because you literally don't have to look at the ground. There's nothing. You're not going to step on anything. It's flat as a pancake. The grass is nice and groomed the entire way. Whereas compared to, you know, there's been some tough courses where, you know, like Max King, you know, we both know Max, and Max mm-hmm. put together a real cross country course for a national championship. And, you know, it was a dope course. And I think it was the club championships and the national champs in 2013 is when Max designed it. And I won that year. And a lot of people were like, oh, that was a trail race. And it was like, you guys need to do your research. Like, cross country is basically a trail race that you can wear spikes on. Basically, it's not rocks, you know, it's not a mountain, you know, super, super rugged race. It's meant to be tough. You know, you shouldn't be able to run or emulate anything that you can do on the track or the road. You should be running way slower than you do on the road or the track.
Yeah. Yeah. Back to Joe Gray, the professional racer, who is your favorite competitor of all time? Somebody that just, maybe you always beat him, but the guy that just pushes you the most, who's Joe Gray's favorite competitor?
You know, that's a tough question, because your favorite competitor is kind of like an oxymoron, right? Like, mm-hmm. If there's a nemesis, someone that really is always giving you a good battle, you love it and you hate it. I love the battles, but I would say my favorite rival person that I race often is probably Max or Andy. I have a lot of respect for them, and they're diverse athletes, you know, which I respect people, and they're not afraid to line it up. There's a lot of guys, they stick to kind of one type of race or one genre because they're afraid to, you know, to lose. They're afraid to put it all on the line. And so I respect guys like that. These kind of guys, they show up everywhere. You know, I've raced both of them in cross and mountain. So I've just kind of seen them all over the map, and I respect them too. And, you know, they're good people. We can hang out. We can talk. You know, ego doesn't really affect our relationship too much.
I've always said if Max would have been born with the, you know, with a football player body, dude, he'd be a linebacker. Max is, it's like a linebacker out there. He just, it always, visually, it's like he's attacking the course.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I have had the opportunity to work with athletes that, you know, as an OCR coach, I have athletes that have come into the sport as a true track and road athlete, and then athletes that come in as they came from the trail mountain running world, mm-hmm. hands down. And I would love for you to speak to this. Hands down, the best athlete that translates the quickest, and just the way they move as far as balance, coordination, agility, the mountain and trail runner runs circles around the track athlete and the road athlete. Hit on some of the high points, why you think that is.
Why
the trail and the mountain athlete always translates better when they decide to come over to the OCR world.
You know, I mean, when you look at OCR, you know, I've had the opportunity to see a couple of those events as well. I was running a couple Spartan trail races, and obviously after your race is over, you have the opportunity to check out, you know, the OCR events. And one thing I noticed that really kind of caught my eye and really intrigued me was it looks very much like cross country. It is a trail race with obstacles. So if you can do 70% of what's there in front of you, which is the trail and the running, you just need to learn, you know, the other skill. You know, you need to build up the arm strength, the grip strength, and things like that. And so, you know, half of the battle is already one in essence, you know, so you're going to be able to translate a lot better. And definitely a trail runner, as opposed to say a road runner, would probably have some issues in OCR just because of the technical nature of it. Like, depending on the course, there are some OCR courses that are kind of rugged where mm-hmm. if you're a road runner, you're not going to, you're going to struggle with the arm stuff, you know, the arm strength type stuff, and you're going to struggle with that technical terrain as well. So I think that the trail runner, at least they got the technical terrain down and, you know, they can work on that other skill and get a little bit better at that. But, you know, that having that natural background, being comfortable on the terrain is a very big deal because that's where you're going to be most of the race.
Is there any chance Joe Gray ever steps up to the start line at an OCR race?
Yeah, I mean, probably. There was one year, actually, I was going to do one, and I can't remember what happened. I think it was a weird year. There wasn't a lot going on, and there was a OCR event, and I was like, man, it'd be cool to kind of, you know, run one of those. But then I think there was an invite for another race, a trail race. And so obviously you're going to go where the money's at, you know, you got to feed the family. So, but it would have been cool to do it. It's definitely something, I don't know if I have time to do it while I'm a professional runner, but like, you know, if I'm retired or, you know, I'm not doing it at this level anymore, then it's like, it gives you more freedom to kind of play around with things. So outside of your realm.
I think Joe Gray at 45, even 50, would be crazy dangerous out there on the OCR course.
Man, some of them, they look really cool, man. I've had a lot of runner friends who do them, and it's like, man, that would be fun to try that.
Yeah, and there's some that are less obstacle dense, maybe less extreme, you know, high-level type obstacles.
Right.
Max, for example, won Worry Dash World Championships 2 years in a row, and it's kind of like, you know, trail running with some pretty serious speed bumps, we like to say. Let me ask you this. What do you consider, you know, I read through 10% of your resume. What do you consider your greatest performance of all time?
You know, it's hard to put it into one performance per se. I would say the consistency is the hardest thing. I've won some pretty big races, like, you know, winning Pan Am's cross country. I was probably ranked like 8th or 9th in that race, probably even 10th. And to win it, I think it caught a lot of people off guard. There have been a couple, you know, the world championships when I first won the world mountain running championship. That was a big deal. You know, there was a lot of guys from Italy, from Uganda, who, and even Kenya, guys like that who were, you know, people would say were better than me. So it was like when I was underdog. But I think the most difficult thing is after you've won these big races to come back and do it again, because now everyone knows who you are. There's a target on your back. You have to then stay healthy. You have to put in another training cycle and come into that race and be ready to roll again. That's hard to do when you're talking about repeating. It's easy to, I think, not easy, but if you're an elite athlete and you're, you know, one of the best athletes, and it's easy to get a title, to get one title, but to do it over and over again really speaks to more than just you had a good day. You know, where you and I both know there are days where you feel great. There's days where you're like, man, I wish I could feel like this all the time. But that's race day doesn't work out that way. Some days you're going to come in, you're going to feel crappy. Maybe you got sick, you know, coming into it, or maybe you had an injury. It almost never goes perfect. So to be able to do things consistently is probably the most difficult thing. So I think adding up, you know, looking at my resume, even when it comes to cross country, being able to win, you know, some of the Pan Am games a couple different times, being able to win Pan Ams in mountain and in cross country within the same period of year. You know, these things are hard to do. Or winning the National Mountain Running Championship year after year, especially when 1 year is uphill and 1 year is up and down, being able to mix that up is very difficult.
You've been doing this for a long time now, and in endurance sports, we do see people performing very well into their late 30s, early mid 40s, even. Mm-hmm. What does your training and recovery look like at 38 versus 28? Like, how do you feel? Does 38 feel any different for Joe after a long training block? And what does that training block look like at 38 versus 28? Kind of talk to us about, I think a lot of people think, oh my gosh, 38, Joe's old, mm-hmm. but kind of paint us a 10-year picture there.
No, I mean, I do think 38 is, you're on the older side, especially when you're talking about sub ultra, where it's very fast. There's a lot of hybrid athletes. You go in against a lot of East African type athletes who have a lot of speed. I would say that the biggest difference is, at 28, I probably wasn't training the right way. So there's a lot of stimulus in my training program that I didn't have. I still eat bad here and there, but I'm not that I disagree with eating bad. I think it's very important and I think it's necessary for periods of time. But at 28, I think I was just doing it all the time and never really thinking about my diet at all, and even supplementation. Like now, I'm sponsored by brands like Never Second and Momentous, where they, Never Second has fueling products for me where I can fuel through workouts, and at the end of that workout, I feel a lot better and more recovered so that the next day, I don't feel like I'm dead in that next workout. Or, now I'm able to chill a lot more. I'm more relaxed, right? Like when you're young, you just kind of fill with piss, you're always every workout's like, you're putting it all out there. And then when you get a little older, you realize there's a progression that needs to take place, especially when you're talking about racing for, 9 months or whatever. So I have a different approach to workouts, more of a moderate approach. And, my mental approach coming into race day is different now. I know what it takes. I know what I need to feel like. I know what workouts are necessary and where I need to be at in those workouts because of the years that I've accumulated. So I know, hey, if I'm running here, then I need to lower my expectations on race day, right? If I'm not meeting those marks that I need to meet in my workouts, I'm not going to go into the race like when I was 28 and say, screw it. I'm going to try to get this time despite I'm not in shape, despite the fact I'm not in shape. But now, you get older, it's like you realize you've been burned a few times, like when you're not in shape and you go after these goals that are way beyond your means and you blow up and then it maybe doesn't go well, you don't feel good, then you realize, okay, I need to change my approach based on where my fitness is.
Mm. Are you currently doing a lot of your own programming? Are you working with a coach right now?
In mountain season, I do coach myself. But Scott Simmons with American Distance Project, I run with those guys on occasion. Not as much at this point in the season because they're on the track a lot. They're getting ready for the national championships coming up in a few weeks here, and they're trying to get their world qualifiers and stuff like that. So they're doing a lot of like very different type work than I could be doing right now. if I was working on kind of that explosive, a lot of that track work, I would probably be giving up a lot of the strength that I need, especially coming up in about a month when my mountain season has kind of really arrived.
Yeah. I can't remember where it was. And it's hilarious. If people could see my desk right now, there's just notes and papers everywhere. It's like, I talked to our producer. I was like, can we go for like 3 to 4 hours? Like, Joe didn't have that much time, but that's what I do. I saw that you dropped a 103 half marathon. I think it was, I can't remember where it was. Let's see.
I've done it twice.
Houston, Texas, you dropped a 103. And I know running in Houston is always freaking hot and humid usually. Did you prepare? Were you prepared for that? Or did you just step in there and run the 103?
So that one, I wasn't prepared. I was getting ready for cross. And so I had just come off of winning my first national championship for cross country. And then I had just made the U.S. team for, I think it was the Pan Am Games that year. Yes. Yeah, it was the Pan Am Games. And we were competing in Tobago, I think, that year. And so I ran the half just kind of almost as a workout and just as I was preparing for cross country. But, yeah, it was tough, you know, especially back then, you know, we didn't have super shoes and I was with a different brand and that shoe was garbage, man. So my feet were thrashed at the end of that race.
Running in Houston will do that. It's, even if it could be 70 degrees, but it's going to be so humid, it's going to feel like you're about to die.
Yeah, it's great though. I mean, Houston at that time of the year is awesome, man. I mean, and it's a good course. It draws out a lot of good runners. So I love coming down to Texas for that one.
Today's episode is sponsored by Heroic. Heroic is a social training platform that empowers you to show up at your best and conquer every obstacle in your life. Heroic is the only app that combines ancient wisdom, modern science, practical tools, and the best of behavioral design technology into a single platform that's built to help you move from theory to practice to mastery. Designed by Brian Johnson, who you've heard on this show, and the same company that created Slack, Tinder, and Uber Eats, Heroic's 3-minute commit plus hit practice will make you positively addicted to actually doing all the things that you know are the best for you. Join the movement at heroic.us and use the code Spartan20 to save 20%.
Yancey's squirrel ADD brain is going to bounce around a little bit here. I meant to ask this question earlier, but you talked about your nutrition. What are some of the, because we're going to have a lot of Spartans and a lot of runners listening to this episode. What are some of those key supplements that you feel it's like, okay, you're crazy if you're not working these into your routine?
Yeah. Well, one huge one for me, you know, I never was a fan of using carbohydrates or using a lot of fuel during training. And, you know, I would kind of drag ass sometimes, you know, I'd have days where I didn't feel good. And then I'd have one workout kind of up here, one workout kind of down there. And big ebbs and flows in workouts. And so I signed, and actually before I signed with Never Second, I was kind of playing around with their product. And they have a gel, and they also have a sports drink, and one of them is called C30. And basically it's got about 30 grams of carbs in it. And then they have a C90 as well. And so I started using these products during training and even post, you know, like I put it in sometimes in my protein drinks, just to help with keeping my carbs up. And I've noticed I feel a lot better because I don't get glycogen depleted after long, hard workouts. And it's allowed me to be more consistent with my training and just to kind of replicate workouts over a training cycle over a period of time where you're still running high volume, you're still putting in a lot of work, but you feel good. And that's important, right? When you're kind of glycogen depleted and you're only getting your calories from the foods you eat and you don't supplement and you're putting in all this work, your body breaks down, your muscles don't recover as well. Your muscles are not able to fire off because they're fatigued. And so, you know, you just notice, you just feel a little bit more of a spark. And mm-hmm. So almost as if like you're tapering, even though you're still putting in a lot of work. And, I've been a big fan of that. Another thing, like I said about the protein, I've been using Momentous. I've been using their protein, and I use that a couple times a week. And even sometimes I'll have some of that before I go to sleep, a couple of scoop or two before I go to sleep, kind of like my milk like a baby before I go go down for the night.
let's rattle that cage a little bit. I don't think you'll mind. My wife's the president of the Collegiate Professional Sports Dietetic Association and the director of sports performance nutrition for University of Texas Athletic Department. And she and I both obviously know the power of carbohydrate, and you kind of drove it home there. Talk to athletes out there. There's, I'm going to flat out call it misinformation. There's so much information flying around about, you know, low carb, low carb, low carb. And we see a lot of high level athletes or athletes wanting to perform at a high level, performing at sports that obviously you need your glycogen stores topped off. I flat out see athletes all the time, like literally attaching a ball and chain to their leg because like, I'm a low carb athlete. Do a little deeper dive. Joe Gray trains 5, 6, 7 days a week, for many, many years, races, very high professional level. Just do your best version of set the record straight, folks. If you are an athlete, you need your carbohydrate because it is it's crazy what's going on out there.
Yeah. One thing I think that happens, and you know, it's not always the athlete's fault. Media does a way better job than, you know, when I was a kid, when you were a kid, we didn't have these really awesome ads to kind of promote these ideas like, oh, you should do the Atkins diet. Look at how you'll feel. And they can really promote these ideas and give you these false ideas and false impression of, as to what this diet can do for you. And what people have to remember is, look, what are the elite athletes doing? If you're looking to set elite goals for yourself, I don't care if you're a 5-hour marathon and you want to run a 4:30, your diet is going to be very much important in terms of replicating what the elites are doing. You're trying to do something that you've never done before. You have performance on mind. One thing you'll always notice is you're not going to see a lot of low-carb athletes in endurance sports at the top of the sport, and especially in mountain running. I can't name one. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Literally, I can't name one person who's even been in the top 10 who's a low-carb person that I personally know or know that they were. You know, a lot of my competition, they're East African guys, and they eat a ton of carbs. Mm-hmm. I train with a lot of, you know, guys who were born in Kenya, and they eat a ton of carbs. And when you go to these training camps, tons and tons of carbs. And I mean, in America, we think, you know, that like a lot of people will look at America and say, oh, there's a lot of carbs, a lot of sugars in your diet. But you have to look at what are the elite athletes doing? And in America, a lot of them are like, they're skimping on their calories, skimping on their nutrients and things like that because they're trying to, you know, lose weight or they're trying to maintain a certain amount of calories and they want to keep it low. And then it's like when you go to elite camps in like East Africa or Ethiopia or whatever, you'll see guys, they're not thinking about that. They're just getting the carbs necessary to put in the work. And, you know, when you do see athletes and groups that do get their carb intake, those groups are very successful, you know, long term. They're not just kind of, oh, they hit it on the ball one race and did really well here, and then you didn't see them for the rest of the season. They're usually running pretty solid throughout the year. And when you have issues with your diet, you're going to be kind of all over the map. You know, you're going to have one race here, one race way underperforming. That's what happens when you have a poor nutrition and you're not giving your body the fuel that it needs. And carbohydrates are a very major component of that in terms of recovery and just overall performance and output.
My wife will appreciate hearing that coming from you, my friend.
Well, if she appreciates it, man, I'm pretty honored. You know, she's pretty accomplished, so I'll take that.
What are you training for right now? What's your next big A race, and how does training look for that race right now?
So, before I go to Europe, I'll do Mount Washington, and, which is kind of almost 8 miles up a road, uphill, about 4,000-ish, 4,500, 4,600 feet of gain. And then I have, the GoPro Mountain Games, which is a really big one for me. It's one I've been doing since the beginning of my career. Real big event in Colorado. And then, the Nationals for mountain running is also, I think, the next month right after that. And there's two championships actually within like the first two or three, like within 2 weeks of themselves. One's the uphill, the vertical championship, and one's the classic, which, I don't know if you remember me and Max did last mm-hmm. year.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So what does a week of training look like right now for you?
Right now, you know, it can be anywhere from 1 to 2 workouts. I'll have my long run on Sunday. And just right now, I'm kind of slowly progressing the volume. This week will be kind of my highest volume since I started training this season. And we'll kind of reassess at the end of this week if I need to maintain that or keep it around there. Because next week I'll probably do another race, just kind of a prep race up at Black Canyon. And, yeah, I mean, I like to progress it and not get too crazy too soon. You know, the world championships are not until November this year. A lot of my major races are not until my first one's not really until June. And then, you know, I got some big races in Europe later in the summer, July, August, September timeframe. So, like I said, just staying healthy, putting in the volume and making sure I'm reaching those benchmarks that I set for myself each season.
Do you normally go by how many miles or kilometers you put on your feet each week, or do you go by time on feet?
A little bit of both. It depends on what race I'm getting ready for. There are, you know, if it's a race where there's a lot of vertical gain, then it makes more sense to focus on minutes and time as per se mileage, just because, you know, for example, training for Dolomite Man when in Austria, right? This race is basically a double vertical kilometer in 11K. And so training for a race like that, if you were, say, trying to run 90 miles that week with that type of gradient, like that would take you hours upon hours to hit.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
It's like you have to be smart about how you're training. And you don't want, like I said before, you don't want to overtrain and just be completely thrashed. And, you know, that would be the equivalent, like 90 miles of that kind of grade would be like the equivalent of running almost 200 miles a week. And which I have no desire to be doing.
We could compare it to the incline, which
I've
always used the, for anybody that's ever done it or not done it, it's about 9/10 of a mile in Manitou Springs for your listeners and viewers. It's got about 2,000 feet of vertical gain and a little less than a mile. And a very fit person could go out there and, you know, I always look at if you go sub 30, you're really, really fit. For the listeners and viewers out there, Joe did it in 17 minutes and I believe 30 seconds and change. It's the crushed 17:45, crushed the record. And if you're ever in the Colorado Springs area, I encourage you to go, and you just need a quick mental snapshot of, okay, how fit is Joe Gray? Take your fitness to the base of the incline and go up as hard as you can. And I'm telling you, if you go sub 30, pat yourself on the back. Very few people walking the planet can go sub 30 on that. Most people dropping the hammer are going to live somewhere in the 30 to 60 minute range, even if they're really dropping the hammer. I've even seen people that are relatively fit struggle to get up there in an hour. 17 minutes. I know it's not an official race. You know, I know the record has been highly publicized. Dude, talk to us about 17 minutes and 45 seconds up that freaking famous ascent, my friend. It's crazy.
Man,
it's freaking crazy.
It hurts, man. That's the incline. If you run it in 25 minutes, it hurts. If you run it in 17 minutes, it still hurts. It's not very a place where you go if you want an easy run, I'll put it that way.
Yeah. Talk to us about Matt Carpenter, who from Leadville to Pikes, and you know Matt's done a lot of stuff in that area. Mm-hmm. That you guys live in. Do you have a relationship with, have you had a relationship with Matt over the years?
No, not really. I've definitely stopped in at his shop and, you know, got some custard and stuff. But yeah, when I see him, I just kind of get the idea that he probably doesn't feel like talking about running all the time. And especially with someone who's, you know, breaking his records per se, because he's a competitive athlete. And he's always going to have that mindset. So, you know, I'm not trying to throw it in his face. I'm not trying to talk about running all the time. When I see him, sometimes it's cool just to, you know, how you doing, man? You know, what's going on and what's new in life, that kind of stuff. But, you know, we don't talk a whole lot. I'm not a man to a whole bunch.
Who are you mentoring right now?
You know, there's, so my project, Inspire Diversity, I opened the door to a lot of, you know, young youth in my area. If they need help with anything, they have questions about college. A lot of them are transitioning to high school and college, and I'll open my arms to them and my phone if they need, you know, help or support. But on top of that, there's a lot of other younger athletes who reach out to me about just sponsorships, training, mountain running in general. And, you know, I try to be there for them, and I try to make sure I answer everybody when they do ask me those questions, because I know a lot of athletes will ignore people when, you know, people ask them questions or DM them, and they're like, you know, I'm bigger than that. I don't need to answer that. And they just ignore it. And I try not to be that person, because I know how it was. I was in their shoes, and I can remember what it was like to be in their shoes. Like, even questions about shoes, right? Like, I didn't know what kind of shoes to wear in a race. And I remember I was bothering Gutierrez and I think Jono as well. And I'm like, hey man, do you wear these shoes or would you wear these? And, you know, I understand what it's like to come into a sport where it's new and you don't understand anything about it, and you need someone near the top to kind of help you and give you some guidance. And, you know, sometimes when you have the time, you know, even though I'm a dad now, I like to make time and make sure I can reach out and help those people.
I love that, man. Who is doing the most? I know you're wearing the Hoka beanie there, and we had Leo Manzano, a local guy here in Austin, Hoka guy. Who's done the most for you? And I don't mean just like, hey, put money in your pocket, but that obviously plays a role. But who's done the most for you as an athlete, as far as a company, a sponsor, just from A to Z? Like, who's doing the best right now? It could be a somebody that's you're sponsored by, or somebody, maybe some additional people out there, companies out there. You know, mm-hmm. Who's really doing it right to serve the running community?
In terms of brands. You know, I think Hoka's doing a really good job in terms of, they're putting ears and eyes on the idea of equality, you know, and especially racial equality, which was really cool. You know, I think a lot of brands, kind of stayed out of that light, and it was really cool that Hoka supported myself and other athletes of color, to show them that, hey, we appreciate you not just because you're an athlete, but we also appreciate you for you as a human being. And that was really cool. You see, who else? I mean, I'm really happy with Hoka that in terms of what they're doing for the sport. I can sit here and tell you about everything, all my other sponsors too. They support, a lot of my endeavors in terms of what I do for Project Inspire Diversity. And obviously that's huge. You know, Tonry, Ghost Leaves, Never Second, they all are very supportive. But in terms of like just what brands are doing for the running community, there's so many brands out there that, that I'm not even affiliated with, that are doing great things for the sport. So, you know, I don't want to take everybody's time. We could go into that forever.
Yeah, sure. What can we do? People like myself that love running and all things running and what it's provided for each of us, what can we do to support and inspire diversity?
You know, one thing you can do, so what some people have done, and I prefer people not send money to me, because I want them to know that where the money's going, and sometimes that it gets a little sticky when you do that. So what I've had people do, if they want to really help, is provide gift cards or gift certificates at local running stores here in Colorado Springs. And then I'll host an event and I'll take those kids to the store in the neighborhood to support them and get them what they need, whether it be running shoes or socks, you know, recovery instruments, accessories like, you know, the massage stick or whatever. So that's kind of what I've done in the past.
I have... and I hope this doesn't, well, I don't know, maybe it's a good thing if we can blow up your Instagram, but I've probably sent you 50 messages over the past 5-6 years, random questions, this or that, and there's never been a single one that goes unreturned. Never a single one. And it's been all over the map, various things that I've asked you. So I appreciate that. And my guess is that you do that for a lot of people. And it takes time out of your professional career, but I just wanted to flat out tell you, I appreciate that. All the random questions that I've asked you over the years, just for answering, for saying yes to come on this podcast. I know we only planned for an hour today, and that's just about up. I wish we'd go on for several more hours. One question I want to finish with real quick is, what do you, I always kind of phrase it like this, you know, what would I want etched on my tombstone? That's kind of the way my wife asks me, you know, what do you want your legacy to be, Joe?
Man, that's a tough one, Yancey. I'm a big believer in being selfless. I try to do my best to be selfless. I look for opportunities to be selfless because I think something in me, it makes me uncomfortable that you do things only for a return. And I've always been bothered by that, you know, and it might be like a Christian upbringing, right? Like when I was young, I remember, I want to say it was my mom, but someone in church was saying, you know, you tithe and then you'll be rich from it or something. They were saying something along these lines. And my mom was like, no, that's not why you tithe. You shouldn't expect anything back. And in fact, chances are you're probably not going to get anything back. That's not what it's about. It's about, you know, supporting the church, you know, supporting God's work and his will. And I don't know, for me, it stuck out because I think it's important when you look at mankind, when we really thrive as a people, as one people, it's because we're helping one another. We're supporting one another. You know, Yancey is hurt and he needs help. And I say, you know what? I got you, Yancey. What do you need? What do you need? How can I help you? How can I be a friend? We need people to be like that. We have a better world when people are selfless. And, you know, I want to continue trying to be better at that, you know, helping people and doing things not for me, not because I want clout or I want people to like me on Instagram or something like that, but doing it because for the greater good and because I want to be a better friend or a better neighbor or a better person for you and just for you, just for that moment and not for anything, not because I think you're going to give me something in return, just doing things and being more selfless. So I think for me, that's what I'd want to be known for, is the guy who did things just solely to be selfless, just to help others and not always thinking about himself. I don't want to be selfish, in essence.
That's a damn good ending, my friend. I appreciate you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Spartan Up. Do you want to be ready for anything? Download Joe's free ebook at spartan.com/readyforanything. Do you know someone who needs a little help staying motivated, staying informed, getting or staying mentally and physically resilient? We're here 3 days every week with a mix of content to help you stay strong. From mindset to nutrition and everything in between. Listen every Tuesday to hear Joe DeSena, Spartan Race founder and CEO. And the rest of the week, join us for DECA, Endurance, and Classic episodes. See you next time. Become the best version of yourself in just 3 minutes a day with Heroic, the new social training platform built to help you be more energized, productive, and connected today. Join the movement at heroic.us. Use the code SPARTAN20 to save 20%.